From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. North Carolina Senate District 8 includes the whole of Brunswick, Bladen, and Pender counties. But this year, there's another piece added to the district, a very small slice of New Hanover County's northernmost part. Senator Bill Rabin of Brunswick County has held the seat for five terms. He first won a seat in 2010, the same year the Republicans gained a majority in the General Assembly. His predecessor, Democratic Senator R.C. Soles, had held the seat for 17 terms, starting in 1976. In 2012, when Bill Rabin ran for re-election the first time, he beat his opponent by nearly 20 points. 2 years later, he won again by 14. In 2016, he ran unopposed. And in 2018, he won his seat once again by about 20 points. He has not responded this year to multiple requests for interviews, and so he will not be part of the Senate District 8 discussion. In the second half of this episode, we'll hear from New Hanover County Elections Director Ray Hunter Havens on what you need to know as a voter this election year. But right now, we're going to meet David Sink, candidate for North Carolina's Senate District 8. David Sink grew up in North Carolina and worked for 31 years in the state's community college system. He served as president of two colleges, Roanoke-Chowan and Blue Ridge. And he will correct me on that pronunciation in just a moment. He also served in the U.S. Army as a combat engineer during the Vietnam era. He recently opened a Meineke Car Care Center in Leland, where he's also a member of the Leland Area Rotary Club. He is a participant and leader in the Boy Scouts of America, and he has achieved Eagle Scout, Order of the Arrow, and Wood Badge. In his spare time, he says he plays the piano, reads about American history, visits Major League Baseball stadiums with his son. He recently sold his Harley-Davidson Bad Boy after traveling to 48 states riding on it. And he enjoys texting with his grandchildren. He joins me now. David Sink, welcome to Coastline.
Good morning, Rachel, and thank you so much for having me on this morning. And it's pronounced Roanoke-Chowan.
Thank you, sir. Now, you have said that state government can positively affect students, teachers, and parents. What is the current state legislature not doing that you think they should be doing for public schools?
Well, I think from the resources that public schools need, they're being shortchanged. And I'm talking about public schools and community college system. There is a sense of from the leadership in the House and the Senate that they're doing great things for public education. But when we just single out salaries alone to our public educators, we are significantly below the national average. And so I think that's beyond embarrassing that our great state should be at least at the national average or above the national average. And then that vaults over into the expenditure per people, per student, I mean, and we're losing that ratio with from the national average as well. And so I think that the General Assembly needs to step back, take a deep breath, and look at where we are spending, where the General Assembly is spending monies from the North Carolina Educational Lottery. Because it is extremely difficult to get a straight answer from the current senator and members of the House as to what percentage of that educational lottery money goes to supplement the education in North Carolina, because that was the intent and that's what the citizens of North Carolina were told when they passed that legislation, that bond referendum, that the money would be used to supplement public education and not supplant it. We're spending way too little of a percentage of those funds going directly to public education. So the first thing we need to do to answer your question is we need to reevaluate where those monies are going and get our teacher pay and our per pupil expenditure up to at least or beyond the national average.
What do you know at this point about where most of that lottery money goes?
Well, it's used to balance the budget. As you know, North Carolina has an obligation that they must have a balanced budget. And so when you farm out some of the traditional functions within the state to private organizations, such as the Department of Motor Vehicles, the Department of Transportation, when we see that it's much more expensive sending out some of those functions to the private sector as opposed to our own state organizations doing it, that to balance the budget, money is coming out of the educational lottery to pick up those over expenses. So without having a budget or in front of me that was passed by the General Assembly, all I know is that the monies are being scattered hither and yon to balance the budget, but it's not supplementing education, certainly not. It's supplanting education.
One of the biggest issues facing the Cape Fear region, including District 8, is the water quality issue, and this is something that you've been vocal about as a candidate. Constituents still, 3 years after we learned about what was in the water, they still have a host of unregulated chemicals that are likely toxic. Brunswick County is working on a reverse osmosis plant. H2GO, another water utility in Brunswick County, is working on such a plant. But what needs to happen at the state level?
Well, first of all, we need to look at the history. And it's not just been the last two or three years. It's been 40 years where the administrators of DuPont and Chemours have knowingly been dumping forever chemicals, PFAS chemicals, Gen X, into our drinking water. And that's unconscionable. I just don't know how leaders of industry can sleep at night knowing that they've been doing that over all these years. Specifically, we need to hold those polluters accountable. Brunswick County is doing a new system, but it's going to cost millions of dollars, and it's going to be picked up by the those of us that pay taxes. I think that clean water is a right. We are entitled to that, and we should not condone it anymore. We need to give adequate resources to the Department of Environmental Quality and give them not only the resources, but the authority to step in and say, you need to do more than just filter this stuff that you are dumping into the waters. You can no longer manipulate the molecular structure so that even our scientists don't know what in the heck you're dumping into the water. You need to filter the smokestacks because Gen X is now airborne. You need to do more than just run water lines to the hundreds of families whose wells have been contaminated and now it's into the groundwater. You need to reimburse the farmers who have lost livestock, who have had to dump out the honey because of the Gen X, the water that's been nurturing the plants. You need to look at the adverse health effect on the citizens, especially up in Bladen County and in Fayetteville, closer to the plant. Look at the increase in cancer, kidney stones, birth defects. Those medical bills need to be picked up. And so that morphs into another topic that we must address that is related to Gen X, and that's making healthcare affordable. And maybe we'll get into another question later on in this interview about how to address that. But we have to have greater resources for the Department of Environmental Quality to do their job. We must hold the polluters accountable for what they have dumped into our drinking water.
Well, let's talk about healthcare then. That is a good segue. And certainly Governor Roy Cooper has pushed hard for Medicaid expansion. We now are looking at about 12 states who have not adopted the expansion under the terms of the Affordable Care Act, and the states who don't, including North Carolina, the answer is there could be, we don't know that this is going to be federally funded all the way down the road, and North Carolina taxpayers could get left holding the bag for all these costs. What's your answer to that?
Well, I think it's embarrassing that we're one of the 12 states that have not taken advantage of Medicaid. We're all paying into that as citizens and taxpayers in North Carolina. So all the other states are taking advantage of by the expansion of Medicaid to provide affordable health care to their citizens. It is very clear that North Carolina would benefit by passing Medicaid. There's somewhere between 500 and 600,000 residents in North Carolina who do not have health care. These are the people who need it the most, would benefit from the expansion of Medicaid. As I understand the financials of it, 90% of Medicaid is paid for by the federal government. The other 10% is going to be picked up by the local hospitals. And so I think it's too premature. It's premature to say that the federal government would not continue to pay for it. We have to look at not only do we provide affordable health care by expanding Medicaid, but we create jobs in the health care profession. And we save some of the rural hospitals, like right here in Southport, Dozier Hospital would be one that would benefit tremendously by having the expansion of Medicaid. So when I get to Raleigh, I'm definitely going to fight to make sure that we expand Medicaid for our citizens in North Carolina.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today, our focus is North Carolina Senate District 8, which includes all of Brunswick, Bladen, and Pender counties and a small northern slice of New Hanover County. Challenger David Sink is with me now. And of course, we heard in the introduction that Senate District 8 has been redrawn to include this small slice at the top of New Hanover County. Where do you think we are now in terms of fair legislative maps? Are we where we need to be? And is Senate District 8 fair and representative for its constituents?
Well, if I was my opponent, the incumbent, Senator Rabin, I would be elated with where we are now, because the gerrymandered system that we have now is one where the elected officials pick the voters instead of the voters picking the representative. What we have is a situation where the lines were redrawn, but it was determined and approved by the members in the General Assembly, which is the equivalent of the fox guarding the hen house. The lines are not fairly drawn right now. They are skewed towards the power structure of the existing leaders in the House and the Senate. It was wrong. Gerrymandering is wrong when the Democrats did it for 100 years. It's been wrong for the last 10 to 12 years that the Republicans have done. And when I get to Raleigh, I'm going to fight real hard that the lines be redrawn by an independent professional group who study this from various universities, and that the General Assembly not be in charge of giving the final approval of it, but it is done fairly and from an educational standpoint and not from a partisan standpoint, which is my opponent was in the Senate, was one of the ones in charge of redrawing the lines. And guess what? It took away one of the strong precincts that we had in 2018 in District 8.
So you're saying that this district is strategically drawn to benefit your opponent, the incumbent. And I'm curious, have you had any virtual events or otherwise where you've been able to debate him or allow constituents to meet the two of you together? Have you seen him this election season?
I saw him once at a restaurant in passing in Southport. Didn't speak, but there have been virtual opportunities through the Brunswick County NAACP. to meet the candidate and the profiles. There have been the League of Women Voters had extended an invitation to have a debate. I participated in all of these, and Senator Rabin has declined or either has not responded at all. I sent out on my Facebook page an invitation to Senator Rabin to have a debate, and have not heard back from that either. So all of our Zoom meetings that we've had with these various organizations who have extended invitation to the incumbent have been met with silence.
So what does this mean at this point when the incumbent, who served five terms and is seeking a sixth, doesn't need to show up at candidate debates or interviews? What does that say about the current state of democracy? And do you even have a whisper of a chance in what is a very red district? Is this all about partisan politics?
Well, yes, it is about partisan politics. It's a slam dunk for gerrymandering, which is the democracy in its worst form. It's what the Russians have. It's an oligarchy. It's the people don't have a voice. That's why I'm running. As we have traveled the four county areas, and we ask people, what do you talk about in the morning around the breakfast table or in the evening? And they tell us these issues that are of most importance. We've hit upon some of them in the interview early on. And what I'm hearing is Senator Hu, we've never seen Bill Rabin in this area. So again, once you are in charge of the hen house, you set your own agenda. And so you purposely keep public education down because you want vouchers and you want charter schools. That's under the skies of parents choosing where their children are going to go, but that's at the expense of the public schools. You purposely do not pass the expansion of Medicaid because your leadership tells you, oh, that was an Obama thing and we don't like whatever anything President Obama did, so we're going to do our own, but they haven't done their own. And so the way it is now is that we'll be outspent tremendously, but we'll not be outworked because we have some wonderful people in Bladen County and Pender County and right here in Brunswick County who are willing to fight the good fight and step up to the plate and swing the bat. But we will not go quietly into the dark.
According to your website, you are endorsed by the North Carolina Voters for Animal Welfare. You have other endorsements, including Clean Cape Fear, I think. But North Carolina Voters for Animal Welfare, what is that group and what does that endorsement mean to you? Why did you get that endorsement?
To be perfectly honest with you, I don't know the answer to that. That was a surprise for us. All the other groups Sierra Club and the North Carolina Educators Association, we cherish those, and the North Carolina Labor Union in the greater Wilmington area, those speak highly to us. But that was, to be perfectly honest and clear, that endorsement was a surprise to us. Don't recall that we solicited that or we went after it and we filled out any application for it.
Well, then I have to ask about if you have a stance on puppy mills, because this is an issue that has dogged Bill Rabin, sorry about that, had to, for a few terms. In 2014, he was recorded at an event using profanity, talking about why a bill that would regulate dog breeders, just creating minimum standards, would never pass. And according to WRAL, Rabin and the American Kennel Club, which lobbies against breeder regulations, argue that that legislation, if it was approved, could lead to burdensome rules then for livestock operations like hog farms and poultry farms. So what is the path forward for folks who would like to see a puppy mill bill passed in the state?
Well, I don't understand how a veterinarian could vote opposing puppy mills. That's just an inhumane process where dogs are bred for the purpose of profit, and regardless of what conditions that those animals are. I know there was a great hue and cry sent out when Dr. Rabin opposed the puppy mill bill, and people couldn't believe it. But then you follow the money and you look at where contributions are made into political campaigns, and then it should be no surprise then how many legislators and senators had their vote bought and paid for. But it's just, I'm aghast as how a veterinarian who makes his living by taking care of animals, and specifically probably dogs are the majority of their business, would be supportive of such a process. And as you said, that has the potential to vault in to the care and welfare of other animals. So I get to Raleigh, I'm gonna make sure that it's not gonna be approved going forward.
And we just have a couple of minutes left, but given the global conversation about white supremacy, what could you or would you do if elected as a white guy to contribute to racial reconciliation, and how have you educated yourself on this front?
Well, thank you for calling me just a white guy. You could have said a chubby, bald-headed guy that's too old and should know better, but you're very kind. I think the most recent newsworthy event regarding systemic racism deals with law enforcement. And I think that what we need to do is to commend law enforcement for what they have done. We need to commend the nonviolent protesters, but we need to look at reallocating resources that we have for law enforcement so that they get the help they need. For example, many times law enforcement officers are called into areas that they're not really trained for, such as domestic dispute. There should be a social worker that goes with law enforcement officers. There should be a psychologist that's assigned to law enforcement units who have gone through basic law enforcement training, so they know what law enforcement people are up, and so have sensitivity training. And the training should be expanded to at least a 1 or 2 year degree at a local community college so that we have an understanding. There should be officers of color who are placed into communities so that we have building a better relationship. I know when I worked at Davidson Community College in Lexington, North Carolina, the police officers and the sheriff's officers would have basketball leagues and play with people in the community. So there just needs to be a much greater reach, outreach into communities so that we can all just, to quote someone, Rodney King a long time ago, can't we all just get along? Until we get to that point, I think we all need to get into good trouble.
Confederate monuments, should they be on public grounds? Why or why not?
Confederate monuments are like waving the red flag in front of the bull from a lot of people. But at the same time, we cannot discard history. I'm against mobs of people tearing down monuments. But I do think that it's a local decision, and the leaders in communities that have statues. There's one in the main square where I grew up in Lexington, North Carolina. I never thought anything about it as a white kid growing up in the South. But we need to form museums in local communities and remove those statues. And in the place where the statue was, put up historic markers that talks about what happened at that particular location or the person that was involved at that location. And so that we don't give up on lose the history of it. But at the same time, we take away from the racial incentives that up or down.
And that's our time. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. David Sink, candidate for North Carolina's Senate District 8. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rachel. I'm sorry we couldn't have both of us here, but I'm glad to be here.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a moment with New Hanover County Elections Director Ray Hunter Havens. Stay with us. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.